Hello, this is Jonathan Marks via PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another programme from the Media Network Vintage Radio Archives.
Hello, you're still with Radio Netherlands, and welcome to a special holiday edition of Media Network, devoted entirely to the subject of radio station jingles. The programme is produced and presented by Jonathan Marks.
If you say the word jingle in this building or any other radio station around the world, you'll get one of three reactions. Programme producers like them, tolerate them, or accuse you of being a young radical who shouldn't resort to gimmicks to liven up a talk. In any event, these short pieces of music are perhaps the most expensive part of a programme, worked out on a cost-per-second basis. It depends how much you use them and what they say. And now we come to define a jingle. You probably associate that music with the BBC, but it doesn't come into today's definition of a jingle, because when the band recorded Imperial Echoes in 1939, they were making a record, which was later adapted into a theme tune for a programme. But this group of musicians coming up did have a particular station in mind when they went into the studio, also in the 1930s.
Oh, 1440 Broadway, 710 on your dial, that powerful, powerful station
with a 50 kilowatt smile.
WOR, New York of the 1930s. And it was in America that the use of jingles began.
Jingles started out with commercial jingles long before it started in IDs with I Pen a Toothpaste in the 30s, in the early days of radio. Soap jingles, and then it came along into radio stations where they said, that's memorable, that's what you remember, because radio and advertising, in order to be effective, has to be entertaining, and you have to be able to retain it.
The voice of Bob Blow, Vice President and Director of Production in the Bill Tanner Jingle Company, based in Memphis, Tennessee, the home of one jingle company that produces many of the IDs played by stations all over the world.
Talks about the weather. No one's done a thing about it yet. But we know a fellow.
His voice is nice and mellow. He's the nicest weatherman we've ever met.
That jingle of the 1950s illustrates a theme made for radio, but more in the form of a short song. Station identification jingles, which try to make you remember a station name or call sign, are a separate science in themselves. Here's how one jingle company of the early 70s tried to persuade European radio customers that a little psychology was necessary.
Recall of the melody is essential, but to get identification that says WNBC is most important.
WNBC, 66.
Note the new vocal sound. Note the weaving of W into the total logo melody.
What is different about the new WNBC logo?
All logo identification, including dial position and the W, is now built on the three notes of...
It's clever and distinctive.
And it is short.
Each and every starter comes in two forms, a high-energy ending and a medium-energy ending.
What does this do for the sound of the station?
It gives a continuing feel. It really makes the station flow, and with less clutter, slowing and accelerating according to design.
Super! But is there more?
Well, now the audience is promised something at the top of each broadcast hour.
Note the jargon there, but won't you get tired of six notes? After all, the people who write jingles for commercials are constantly having to dream up new tunes.
We have never seen ever a slack in the use of station ID jingles. You're talking about six notes, that's all there are. That's all the notes we have in a six-note jingle. And they're only so many combinations of those notes. As far as them getting stale, I don't think they do, because an identification is what you're looking for. And you're looking for something that every time you hear those notes, you think of that radio station, whether or not you're listening for the call letters. Just, it's in the background. It could be subliminal. But every time you hear those notes in that same configuration, some radio stations today are using exactly the same logo that they were using 20 years ago, and that's what it's all about, is identification.
How did the six-note jingle start in the first place?
Mainly because of the call letters east of the Mississippi is where the, in the United States, where the majority of the radio stations are located, with the W, which is a three-syllable, and then three other letters. Da-da-da-da-da-da.
WRNO, New Orleans.
Buddy Scott is Vice President and General Manager of TM Productions in Dallas.
Most jingles and most jingle writers have a tendency to follow the period of music. So I think just by listening to the style of the jingle, the arrangement of the horns, the arrangement of the instruments, how much rhythm, what kinds of rhythm, you can get a feel for what era it came out of. The guitar style, the guitars can be a dead giveaway. Guitar styles changed from the 50s to the 60s to the mid-60s to the late 60s with the heavy metal AOR sound. So that's a dead giveaway. The one thing that perhaps
business
over the years are the vocal styles. The vocal styles have remained a little more consistent up until perhaps the last year. And then they started to change, too.
In what way? Using more singers, less singers, or a different style of singing?
A different style of singing. Let's talk about the kinds of styles that have been most popular. For a long period of time, a seven-voice group was very popular. One of the members of the group having that big, rumbly, deep bass voice that you hear on so many of the packages. And a seven-voice group that might be stacked two or three times. Stacked meaning one set of voices overlaid on the other. Then a little bit later on, the groups were cut down from seven to five, and again stacked three times, and they started singing parts. They might have done the harmony in three parts, which gave it a little different flavor. But again, still using seven, five, and it wasn't much different, interchanging the two for some differences in style. I mean, today we still sing some seven-group jingles, and we still do some five-group jingles sung in three parts. But then recently, with the change in the music, we started changing the instrumental styles a little bit. We started more closely copying a record sound. That seemed to be what radio stations wanted. They wanted something that their audience could relate to as being a little more compatible with the music sound the station was playing on the air.
B96. Air power from TM. It'll take you soaring above your competition. Packed with the power you need in IDs.
Jingles have a variety of uses. In the 60s, the common brash impact approach tended to break up programs, at least to European ears. The concept now seems to be more to link the material together. Stations in the competitive marketplace are always trying to outdo each other. But there are a few cases of stations playing another station's jingles for malicious purposes. But the story goes that one station in Dallas once did, pointing out how its competitor wasn't doing all that well.
It's a shame what's happened to radio, but they can't afford to do it anymore.
Do it anymore.
It's a shame they can't hire a section of brass. Be so much class on KVIL, but they can't afford to do it anymore.
Do it anymore.
It's a shame. It's a shame what's happened to radio, but they can't afford to do it anymore.
Do it anymore.
You remember the days they had a big rock band. I'd like to give them a hand on KVIL.
Having heard that, KVIL is supposed to have gone to the same jingle company and produced this march, clearly indicating who was setting the trends.
KVIL, don't look now, but I think we're being followed. Way back there, don't you see we're being followed?
The style of singing has changed over the years, and so have the instruments. Buddy Scott from TM again.
Traditionally, jingle companies like ours would put the drums back over in a corner and put baffling around it, and that was the drum sound that you always heard. Well, if you study and analyze what music will sound like on a record, a lot of it is recorded live in clubs, on concert, this kind of thing. The drums are right out there center stage, no baffling, wide open. So we move the drums in some of the things we produce to center stage in the studio. We went out and found not necessarily just session players, but we found some stage players, some concert players, especially the vocalists. The vocalists were a little, not quite as smooth, were a little raw, a little raspy, a little coarse, which is kind of the sound that we hear today in contemporary music. So we've tried to diversify. We can still do the older styles, if that's what a station wants, but we want to be as mainstream as possible and as contemporary as possible, to be able to provide the radio station virtually any sound that they need.
So how many singers have you got on staff then, singing your jingles?
We don't have any singers on staff. Everybody we use is freelance. We have three full-time writer producers. We think that's very important. But we probably have a pool of 250 to 300 singers to choose from, depending on what we want a project to sound like.
Other companies, like Tanner in Memphis, have a different arrangement.
No, we have 7 full-time lyric writers on staff and 8 full-time arrangers-composers on staff. I have a vocal group. Goes to work like I do every day, 8:30 in the morning, and they sing every day till 3:30. Full-time, 6-voice vocal group, staff, musicians. All the musicians that we use, they are outside people. They are not staff people.
Face it. The most successful radio station in a given market is usually the most consistent. It's the station that knows how to use the basics of good station identification. And now, Jam has the perfect match.
WFYR Chicago.
Don't let tempo transitions alarm you. The fire creates a blend with double call letter impact.
In 1974, Jonathan and Mary Lynn Wolfert started Jonathan and Mary Lynn Creative Productions, otherwise known as JAM, in Dallas. Jonathan explained to me the way station identification packages are put together.
Basically, we offer 2 different kinds of services. A package can either be custom or syndicated. Everything starts as a custom, and that's where a station, usually in a larger city where they have a bigger budget to work with, will come to us and say, all right, this is what we want. These are the kinds of lyrics we want. In some cases, they'll give it to us and just ask us to make the jingles. In other cases, they'll just give us general information and ask us to compose lyrics and suggest lyrics. In that event, we do everything from scratch. We write the jingles and we bring in the musicians and the singers and do it all. I personally write some of the cuts, not all of them. We have other writers that work with us as well.
New York, New York. Can talk to us. WABC Talk Radio 77.
Let's say we've done a package like that for a station in New York. We will make that package available to stations in other cities. Obviously, no other station in New York can have it, but we'll make that package available in Chicago or Detroit or London or Hong Kong. We've done jingles for Hong Kong, by the way. In that case, it's a syndicated package in which they will listen to the stuff we've done for New York and say, hey, we really like that, and instead of singing WABC New York, we want you to sing WLS Chicago. We use the same music beds. We just get the singers back in and re-sing the cuts. Obviously, that's a little less expensive. You know, a lot more stations use that technique.
Which explains why you could have come across Manx Radio in the Isle of Man, Europe. A very similar jingle to that being played on a station in the Caribbean.
We're the spirit of the Caribbean, Radio Antilles, the big array.
And buying syndicated jingles is very much cheaper. It was the commercial stations that got jingles accepted in Europe. Radio Luxembourg is one example, but the offshore pop pirates of the 60s probably had the biggest impact. The largest pop pirates went to companies like Pepper and Tanner, or PAMS, in the United States, and got the singers to sing Radio Caroline or Britain Radio.
Hallmark of quality, Britain Radio.
Other pirates got hold of American jingles and did some very careful, or not so careful, editing to get rid of the original call letters. Some European countries, though, weren't ready for the jingle concept, the musicians demanding royalties every time a jingle was played, like a conventional performance on disc. No way, said the stations, and went to America, where companies agreed on a one-time fee. But just how much does it cost?
Just as an example, a package which may have cost $15,000 to do as a custom package may only cost $3,000 in its syndicated form, because the major expenses, which are the writing and the musicians and so forth, have been covered, and really from that point on it's just a matter of hiring the singers again and, you know, covering our overhead and studio and so forth.
Did you ever get the problem, though, that people want you to sing lyrics that are impossible?
Yes, constantly. We're always getting stations who perhaps do not understand the intricacies of music well enough to understand that you can't replace a three-syllable phrase like Chicago with a phrase like Raleigh-Durham, Chapel Hill, North Carolina. That's an example that came up just last week. And the guy said, well, you know, just put it in there. It works. Of course it doesn't. So we have to invent clever ways to make it fit, or clever ways to talk him out of what he wants.
The time is 6:45, and here is the local news.
Good morning. Here's Monday's news from the Samoa Broadcasting Service.
Stations all over the world make use of jingles, and in many cases, because of syndication, it's North America that decides the trends. So, what are they?
Well, there will always be a need for the shotgun-type jingles, but we see a trend lately into the longer-type songs, which are an image-building vehicle for the radio station to use to show their involvement with the community and the people who listen to the radio station. We just finished a new country music package, which we call Portraits, because a portrait is an image, and that's what we were trying to create, an image of what that radio station meant to the community. Television taught radio some ways to promote their own station, because television songs, city songs or image songs for the television station. And then during rating periods, radio stations would want something to promote their station, and they would use television as an advertising vehicle. And the way to do that was an image song that told about their radio station and their listeners and their involvement in the community.
And in 1983, the use of electronic music seems to be more acceptable than it was 10 years ago.
For a long time, we'd take the Moog and we'd say, look, we can make this sound exactly like strings or exactly like trumpets. Well, we really can't do that. It doesn't really sound like live trumpet, and it doesn't really sound like live strings. So for a long time, I think the progress of electronics was held back. Once we realized that electronics have their own special sound, they don't have to sound like anything else. They don't have to sound like strings. And then we started using them in such a way that they created a very special sound of their own. Musicians, especially rock musicians, started doing all kinds of innovative and creative things with it, and we are too. There's, for example, a new drum set on the market. It's called Simmons Drums, and we've used it on two of our most recent jingle packages.
Hot fun in the summertime on
But I can't help wondering that that six-note combination has been syndicated so much that maybe it triggers more than one set of different call signs for the same person. Jingle users, you see, aren't very original. Jonathan Walford again.
Unfortunately, there's a lot of imitation in this, in the radio business, and if something works well for a station in one city, inevitably someone in another city will want to copy that. There is always somebody who is willing to say that jingles are dying and nobody's using jingles. If nobody's buying jingles, how come we're so busy? It does, however, go in phases. You'll go through an era where everybody uses a lot of jingles, and then one station, in an effort to be different, will perhaps take off their jingles. And then, other stations will, like I said, there's a lot of copying going on. Other stations might do that or make the jingles very short or very simple. But then once they've all done that, they once again all sound the same. So then some genius will say, hey, let's have long jingles. And they'll do that, and it's like the whole thing is reborn, and it's continually going through those cycles. Right now we're in a cycle where a lot of stations are using jingles.
Mexico. As you see, many of those pieces of music recorded in Texas or Memphis turn up all over the world. Companies like TM plan it that way.
We work with a fellow in England who has a studio in Kempsey. In the Dominican Republic, we have an association with a fellow that has a studio there, so we'll do a lot of vocals. We don't do any instrumentals down there, but we'll do a lot of South American, Spanish vocals down there because it's very difficult to duplicate that kind of a sound. We've cut things for four stations in Germany. We just did some things for Holland. Italy, we did very recently. Portugal, we've sung in probably a dozen different languages, as well as singing in English.
Hello, my name's Johnny Beeling, and I'm head of programs at BBC Radio 1. That's the British Broadcasting Corporation's national pop and rock music network. And over 8 million people throughout Great Britain tune in to us every day, which I suppose makes us one of the biggest stations in the world. Radio 1,
national radio. We do jingles for the BBC, we do the jingles for Radio 1 and Radio 2, which are their rock and easy listening networks, respectively. We've done jingles in French for Quebec, Canada. We've done jingles in Spanish for Puerto Rico and South American countries. Stations around the world, and including the Voice of America.
This is Friday morning on the
Voice
of
America. We've done jingles in Portuguese for stations in Brazil. We just did some experimental cuts for a station in Switzerland. They wanted us to do them in Swiss German, so that was an interesting challenge to see if we could master that phonetically. It's a new network called DRS3.
But not all jingles come from North America. Closer to you in the daytime, closer to you in the night.
Radio 210. That was recorded in England for a commercial station in Reading.
And here in Holland, the Veronica Pop Organization commissions its own work locally.
It is a very specialized business. There's really only a handful of companies in the whole world that do this on any great scale. At least in North America, probably 90% of the station jingles you hear are attributed to one of five companies. There is a lot more that goes into creating these little songs than anybody would ever imagine.
In North America, the existence of these satellite radio networks has led to a new kind of jingle philosophy out of necessity. A local station somewhere on the Arizona desert, carrying music and news from, say, one of the ABC radio networks, still wants you to remember it's a local station at heart. Special cue tones are thus used on the satellite feed. So when a national program presenter pushes a button in, for example, Los Angeles, hundreds of jingle machines at stations all over the United States start up, each playing a local station identification. Hit Radio KHTR, St. Louis. That's clever, isn't it? But the key to its success lies in the jingle company.
We are in production on 3 new ID packages, all designed for satellite music stations. And this is where all the programming comes in on satellite, and the time configuration is very, very limited. That an ID, everything is in 5-second increments. So we're doing IDs that cut off at exactly 5 seconds. And we're doing it in 3 different formats for satellite music stations, which we've had a lot of requests to do.
Bob Blow. Most jingle companies also make backing music for commercials as well as station identifications. And it's through selling advertising many people end up in the jingle business. But Jonathan Walford of Jam started by listening to the radio, including shortwave.
I grew up in New York and could receive a lot of stations, especially at night, from all over the country. And I was always fascinated by how stations in different cities could have very similar jingles, but something about their city or area of the country that they were in, and I thought that was really fascinating. So as I got older, I found out more and more about the people who made them and where they were made and how. I started to collect them as a hobby, which I thought was a very peculiar hobby until I found out there were others just like me that also did that. It sounds like a silly thing to collect, but it's no weirder than collecting matchbook covers or license plates or beer cans or any other crazy thing.
QSL cards.
QSL cards. I collected them, too. I have one of yours, as a matter of fact.
That's us. And that jingle was made in our studios here in Hilversum. You try to say Wereld Omroep with a convincing Dutch accent. Well, my colleagues Pete Myers and Dennis Powell are the main voices behind Media Network's jingles. I look after the music. And may I thank a number of Media Network listeners who suggest themes from time to time. Brian Wallace in Scotland and Steve Webster in Ontario, Canada are 2 names that immediately come to mind. Well, what's the philosophy, you may ask, behind the Media Network jingles? Well, we make a mixture of musical bridges, which we hope have a touch of dry humour.
Media Network, aimed at target audiences above and below the belt. The equatorial belt, that is.
And we mix that with general jingles, aimed at promoting the medium of shortwave radio itself. After all, it needs all the publicity it can get.
If your local radio station gets you down with meaningless mutterings on medium wave, pick up on Radio Netherlands, the international shortwave information station.
I'm pretty sure that we've got some jingle collectors listening today. Here's an open invitation to come up with what you think is the world's worst jingle for a possible follow-up program in the new year. What about this?
Hello, my dear friends. This is Tiny Tim saying, don't forget. Oh, tiptoe, write to Katie and Denver today.
Remember, a jingle should be good. It's often cost a vast amount of money.
In the neighborhood of $200 per unit. And there might be 20 units in the package, there might be 10 units in the package.
Well, it can cost as little as $100 for one jingle, clear up to, we produce packages for $20,000, $30,000, even $40,000.
$40,000, eh? Hope you don't spend that kind of money on your New Year party this Saturday night. And gee, you should see this studio at the moment. There's tape everywhere. Anyway, let me thank Pim Weimer, who engineered today's production, and this is Jonathan Marks in Hilversum saying, see you in 1984.
Media Network Jingle Special was produced by Jonathan Marks. If you'd like to make a comment, drop us a line or give us a call on the Radio Netherlands answer line. Country code 31, then 35 18700.